Welcome to What If, the Futures Legal Podcast.
I'm Hasti.
And I'm Rana.
Every episode, we ask a bold what if question and explore how law might evolve to meet the future.
From AI to space and everything in between, we explore how law, policy, and society adapt when the future arrives faster than we expect.
Because every what if brings us one step closer to the future of law.
Let's get started.
Hi everyone, and welcome to the very first episode of What If, the Legal Futures Podcast.
So today's question is, what if humans settled on Mars? What kind of laws would govern us beyond Earth?
And to help us answer this question, we joined today by our lovely guest Sylvia. Sylvia, would you like to introduce yourself to our listeners?
Sure. My name is Sylvia. I'm from Portugal. I'm a master's student finishing my degree in international development and public policy. I also studied sociology, so it's very relevant for this question. And I did the European Space Agency summer course on space law and space policy in Estonia in August.
Thank you so much for being here. We couldn't think of a better guest. When we decided that we wanted to do an episode on space law, my first thought was to reach out to Stefan because he was on the space course and the first name that he mentioned was you. So thank you.
Thank you.
And I'm Stefan. I am an English literature bachelor's student, but I have been researching space law. I was also on the space summer school in Estonia with the European Space Agency, and I'm very happy to be here.
Perfect. Let's get straight into it. So before we dive into the hypotheticals, let's ground ourselves into the basics. Sylvia, can you explain in simple terms what the Outer Space Treaty is and why it's important?
Of course. The Outer Space Treaty was signed in 1967, and it's the foundation of international space law. It establishes that outer space, including moon and other celestial bodies, belong to everyone and no one.
That means that no country can claim sovereignty or ownership, and it also bans certain weapons going up into space, and it makes countries responsible for their activities, whether or not they're carried out by governments or private companies. So if you build a rocket in your backyard and you launch it from your garden, that doesn't mean that suddenly you're your own entity in space. You're still the responsibility of the government from the country you launched from.
So if, say, a US company were to build a colony on Mars, would that make it American territory or not?
Well, the Outer Space Treaty and several other treaties after have said that you can't own anything in space. You can own your own things. So if you put a satellite in space, that is your satellite. No one else owns that. But for example, if you put a base on Mars, you don't own Mars just because you have something on top of the soil there. It's I think a phrase used in the Outer Space Treaty is the common heritage of mankind.
Yes.
And that is a very interesting legal term because it suggests that it's something to be held in common for all of mankind.
Sylvia, do you have anything you want to add?
Yeah, I also wanted to say that if the US decides to send a colony to Mars, most likely the people who are born there will be American because they're using American resources, because you cannot live on Mars without like highly technical developments and someone needs to take care of that. So it's, as Stefan says, it's the responsibility of the government from where the person is coming from, the state. Mm-hmm.
That's so fascinating. And I think it immediately raises questions about how, you know, permanent settlement could even work under that framework. Like, let's say technically, if I start a shawarma store, does it belong to me? Who does it belong to?
I'll definitely be your first customer. And that's one international law I could definitely get behind. But what can we get an answer from either of you?
Well, unlike starting a shawarma shop on Earth, in this case, you would be able to own all of everything that all the shawarmas produced, but you wouldn't be able to own the land underneath. So if someone else, this is one of the big challenges of space law, is if someone else wants to use the land that shop is on, or, for example, to make it more relevant to Mars or the moon, if you want to mine something, you can own the mining equipment, but you can't own the thing you're mining. That's very different than on Earth, because Earth, you can just buy the mining site, right? You can own the land. You can own all the resources on the land. But anywhere you go in outer space, you have to, right now, you have to have the ability to basically pack up shop and leave.
That is very interesting and fascinating, to be honest. Do you have anything to add, Sylvia?
I would just say that if you decide to open a shawarma shop, you have to like bring your own materials and it will be yours because you brought it from Earth. So you're not claiming anything that it's in space already.
Something to keep in mind. But on that note, let's move to our very next what if question.
So let's imagine that people start building permanent homes on Mars. Could they own that land?
I don't think the individuals would be able to own that land, most likely the governments itself. But as we discussed, it's not legal to appropriate resources of mm-hmm. space. However, that's a bit of a debatable question. But I wouldn't think like individuals itself could carry land ownership. More likely the governments who are like setting it all up.
Yeah, that's very, I think, something to think about because a lot of governments are growing debates on, you know, space resources and because, you know, maybe private companies wanting to own land or maybe their own resources on other planets as we are growing research on there. That's a very good thing to keep in mind. And a lot of companies and like people are trying to invest in that. But yeah, so in your opinion, we might see the first property disputes on Mars, not over land, but over who gets to use the specific resources?
Yes, because it's not an habitable planet for humans. So we need to treat oxygen. We need all these kind of equipments. So the big question would be to who gets to decide how much each person gets. And it would be like resource division. I don't know how to mm-hmm. say it. Maybe you can help.
Yeah, well, with Mars especially and other places like the moon, there are some of the most important resources are very scarce. So think of stuff like ice. In Mars, there's only in the moon, there's only a few places, but in Mars, you go to the North and South Pole where there's mm-hmm. still water ice. The issue is that when you have something as fundamental for life as air, and that's a commodity which technically you can't own. You can own the product of what you use. So if you take some ice and then you make oxygen with it or rocket fuel, you can own that stuff, just can't own the ice itself. Mm-hmm. And so there's definitely going to be legal disputes over mm-hmm. Over that division of resources because there's no... I mean, you get legal disputes when there isn't a perfectly clear boundary in the law. Yeah. So when there's a gray zone, that's when you get legal disputes.
Another legal gray area that we wanted to touch on was how some countries like the US and Luxembourg have already passed some national laws that allow companies to own what they extract, like what you were talking about, even though according to the Outer Space Treaty, they can't own the land, right? So there's a legal gray area between international law and the national ambitions of countries. Do you guys have anything to say about that if you're familiar like with yeah. these national laws, for example?
Yeah, so that's actually an ongoing debate right now. So Luxembourg released this paper in 2017 and they already passed national laws as the US and Japan, which allows companies that are registered in their country to extract these resources from space to then create something. And obviously they would have to pay the countries where they are registered. So this is also a way to get more funding for space activities. Even though on a sustainability level, if every country can just have their own national laws in space and then ignore international law, the countries with most resources would be the first to like get these scarce resources. Yeah. And then it obviously creates an imbalance. So... there's a lot of advocates for this because it brings a lot of funding from other companies and stuff. But at the same time, we have to think in the long run. So I don't really like this national law, and I'm one of the people that speaks against it.
I could also add that when Sylvia and I were in the summer course in Estonia over the summer. Yeah, over the summer. We received a lecture from a representative of the Luxembourg government. And essentially, the lecture kind of devolved into a Q&A where we were grilling this representative of why did you allow this to happen? Because really, when you get to these kind of international treaties, it's just politics. And you've got the Outer Space Treaty, which in the, you know, you need to look at it through the politics of the Cold War. You've got the USA versus the USSR. And so it's a bit of a compromise between the USA's free market capitalism and the USSR's kind of trying to export communism. So you have some provisions, for example, that on the USA, they said, you know, companies can go into space. That's something that they allowed more freedom for companies to go into space. But the USSR wanted to make sure that the USA doesn't monopolize all the resources in space. And this is something a lot of smaller countries agreed with. The issue then, though, is that if these areas of space are for all mankind, how do you as a country exploit the resources? And there isn't really an answer to that right now. And something the Luxembourg government said is that we looked into the Outer Space Treaty and there is nothing that forbids us from owning the products of the resources. And then they didn't want to elaborate more on that. And we asked, well, what was your argument? Can you tell us like your legal research? And they said, nope, that's a state secret. So that kind of tells you that if an argument is a state secret, it kind of tells you how the argument was formed. But specifically, there's this thing called the Artemis Accords that we can talk about more in a second. But the Artemis Accords is something that's being pushed by America that allows for a lot of, is unilaterally as well. It's not done through the UN. That allows for a lot more exploitation of resources in space.
Mm-hmm. And I think that's when consensus and cooperation is very important when we turn to space law, any law that we have. Because if we can't get to a consensus on how to regulate that law, then the law won't even be in place, you know? And I think, you know, that's where technologies like blockchain come in to help. For example, creating transparent and decentralized records of who's doing what. And just to explain, blockchain is basically like a digital system for recording information safely instead of, you know, one company or government controlling the data stored across lots of computers at once, so no one actually secretly can change it. And it's already been used on Earth a lot of times and for things like tracking money, art, or supply chains. So, you know, in space, it could help keep a fair record of who's mining or building anything.
So in the future, your property deed might be literally an NFT floating somewhere above Mars.
And honestly, I think that sounds like something a billionaire would brag about already. But let's move on to the next question.
Suppose a child is born on Mars. What nationality would that child have?
I think it depends on the parents' nationality. And if it's like different nationalities, I think they would have... Obviously, there's no laws about this, so this is all hypothetical, but I think they would have to create a system where you either have one of the nationality of the parents. As I said in the beginning, it most likely is associated with the state of the government who is helping these people survive on Mars because you cannot do it alone. What do you think, Stephen?
Well, yeah, as you can imagine, there's nothing that exists currently to say if you're born in space, where are you from? But... most countries, you can get citizenship from your parents. But when there's an interesting question when it comes to getting citizenship by what jurisdiction were you in when you were born? And so if we look at like, we can take the example of maritime law. If you're born on a ship that's flying, an American flag and it's in international waters, you are then an American citizen. And so perhaps if you are born, because again, you can't own the land. So if you're born on a, in a module on a Mars base that is American or Indian or Chinese, then you become a citizen, you gain citizenship of that country. But there is an issue of cases in which someone could maybe become stateless because they were born in a module where the jurisdiction does not allow for citizenship that way.
Yeah, I absolutely agree, because Mars is not a state like you said, so there's no citizenship technically. But that means the child would most likely inherit the nationality of their parents, as mentioned. But maybe let's think a few generations ahead, people born and raised entirely on a different planet like Mars, who's never been to Earth, you know, would they still take on the nationality of, you know, their parents and be an Earth citizen?
I feel like maybe this is somewhere where sociology could come into play. So let's hear from Sylvia.
Yeah, I think like differentiating Earth people from humans in Mars would bring a new kind of discrimination. So I guess we should all classify them as humans. Just said, oh, I wasn't born on Earth, maybe like that, but not have like a separate category. Unless if we're thinking generations ahead, people have been settled in Mars for a few decades. So maybe their bodies would have changed, something must have adapted. Maybe they would have like some physical conditions different to humans on Earth. But I don't think it would be good to have like a new category separating these people. What do you think, Stefan?
When it comes to citizenship, though, it's an interesting question. I mean, yeah, we don't know what happens to the body if you spend that time, much time in space, if you're born. But we don't. So it's like an important question.
You become a molecule.
you disappear into thin air. But like, so we don't know what happens, for example, during pregnancy in space. We have no idea. And we have no idea if that can compound over several generations. So there is a genuine question, like, would they even be considered human? Let's say,
alien.
Put it 200 years in the future. And let's say it's six, seven generations. Then, you know, there are questions that might be raised as to whether or not they can even qualify for citizenship. I mean, with these kind of questions, you just have to assume that law is going to adapt over time and that maybe some treaty is going to be formed. Maybe there's going to be some kind of new territory on Mars that would allow them to have a Martian citizenship. But we just don't know.
Yeah, to be honest, I do disagree on some parts of Sylvia's argument that there shouldn't be a new category. Obviously, we are all humans, but like Staff said, we don't know if, you know, the next few generations in another planet are even going to be considered humans. So maybe a new category under, you know, international framework, perhaps, you know, overviewed by UN or maybe an interplanetary body would be the best thing to do so. And also, I think citizenship in general, just, I think it's a framework where it limits your travel. And if we do get to extend where we travel between space, I think it wouldn't be really needed, but still a type of identity tracking would be nice to have just to make sure things are kept in record.
I mean, one thing that I just thought of is that under the current Declaration of Human Rights, there's no human rights to a certain gravity field, which if you're born on Mars and your physiology is different, you will probably need a certain like Martian gravity. Otherwise, you'll just be crushed under your own weight on Earth.
Yeah.
So there's all these kind of provisions that we have no idea what might happen to the human body and what might happen to law in order to cater to those different human bodies in the future. So,
but I mean, an interplanet passport, that's a strong one, to be honest.
That's a very strong passport.
Yeah. So moving on to the next, you know, part about law and order on another planet like Mars. Sylvia, let's take this maybe further. Once we, let's say, have a town, have a city, have families living on a different planet for generations, what about law and order? If someone, you know, commits a crime on Mars, who prosecutes them? Are they, you know, held to the same standards as a human on Earth? Or would you say maybe a new framework needs to be introduced?
Well, I think if we have like a town built, we need to have some sort of government, some sort of organization. And there would obviously a kind of police to supervise the crimes. I was actually thinking about this, like one of the severest punishments would be to send away to Earth and to never come back to Mars or something like that. But I don't know, a prison in Mars might be like interesting, but I think they will have to like have a police associated with the state that they're in.
I mean, I just had a thought of what if in the future Mars is like used as like almost the other way around, as like a penal colony or something, like Australia, but like a really futuristic version.
I mean, you do sociology, so you're the expert, but when we were doing A-level sociology, we studied that British, you know, criminals were sent to Australia. Yeah, as a punishment. So maybe that could be Mars versus Earth. We're not sure. But that's quite scary to think about.
I mean, some of the landscapes are pretty similar. When you think of the outback, there's not much there. So, but as well, like this kind of society that would develop on Mars. As we're seeing, because the main driver of innovation in space today is SpaceX. There's just no one who really competes. And we might see like company towns like pop up in the future. And that might be an interesting like crossover between regular law and maybe a corporate code that citizens have to abide by to live.
I was actually going to later come on to like the influence that private corporations, but also like international state actors will have in forming a new like extraterrestrial legal system. But before we get onto that, I was just wondering, obviously this is half serious, but my question for you guys is, if someone were to rob Hasti's future Martian shawarma store, would she call 999, meaning the local Martian police, or would she call NASA?
Well, if she called 999, they might take a while to get there, right? So I don't know, the most, I think there should be like an option to call the local Mars police and not like interfere with the police on Earth, because it's a quite a distance, you know.
Yeah, I think that just shows how fragile and vulnerable the legal system would be if we are meant to go on another planet. I mean, look at Earth. It took us generations and, you know, decades to actually make the laws that we have today. And even right now, they're not perfect. I don't think law will ever get perfect. And I think it would be really difficult to start from scratch again in another planet. And even defining what counts as, you know, a crime in another planet might be different to what counts as a crime on Earth. Because we don't even know what form we would have if we are in another planet for generations. Like, you know, Steph said, we might turn into molecules. We don't know.
And there's a lot of ways to make that kind of crime. There's a lot of gray zone in that kind of crime. Obviously, it's stealing shawarma, you know, theft. However, there's a lot of, because it's, I mean, the closest analogy I could give to it in when you're in outer space is like being in international waters. There's no like real jurisdiction, and there's no real, there's currently no real understanding of where something stops. So right now there's something called the Rescue Agreement, which is basically an international treaty. It says if your satellite's out of control or if an astronaut is stranded somewhere, if you're able to help, you need to help. And that's modeled on something that is goes on with maritime law. If someone could argue, I thought your shawarma was an astronaut in need of distress, then feasibly they could say, yeah, well, I thought it was an astronaut, so I had to go rescue it, and it's mine now. And, you know, then you have to say, you need to return it to country of origin. But there's a lot of, like, gray zone stuff that could go on that it's not really clear what's theft, what's not theft, what's rescuing, what's not rescuing.
Also, what we're considering here is the creation of a new, you know, extraterrestrial jurisdiction with its own courts, for example. And it's very fascinating, but also a little terrifying to imagine an entire justice system, for example, created from scratch. And a question that I had was, do you think, I mean, maybe this is like a bit too complex and like a bit impossible to answer just in the abstract, but do you think that it would resemble more of like a common law or civil law jurisdiction's legal system? So like for those of you who don't know the difference, the English legal system, US, most Commonwealth jurisdictions are common law systems where court decisions and legal interpretation shape the law. So you look to like past precedent, whereas countries like France, for example, the role of the judge in a court is a lot more, I wouldn't say straightforward, but like formulaic, like they have a codified set of rules and they'll just look at the facts of the case, put it into the formula, which is the rules to get the outcome. I think, Stefan, you're probably going to suggest that because there's an entirely new set of rules, how could you have any precedent to go off of?
Yeah.
Do you want to make your point?
I'd argue it would be probably civil law. You know, you'd have a code, a legal code that would basically ascribe a lot of the issues that might arise and how to deal with the issues and what the crime should be. Because there's a lot of issues that have never come up before on Earth. Issues of like a right to breathe, a right to, you know, these things do exist in terms of like air quality, and air quality would be a big thing if you can imagine on Mars. But it's still like a lot of these issues just don't translate well, and you can't really look to Earth precedent for the punishment. I mean, personally, I wouldn't want to have the same punishments that go on to companies that are found to pollute the water or pollute the air on Earth to go on to the same ones on Mars, because it's way more important on Mars than it is on Earth, because on Earth you have an atmosphere and on Mars you don't. So I would say probably civil law is the best. But I don't know, there's also an argument for common law.
Actually, it's quite interesting. I was thinking that a hybrid mix almost of the two types of legal system could work well, of having, you know, a set of codified rules that work well, that are like especially constructed for Mars or any other like extraterrestrial setting. But also because, as we've discussed, there's so many like novel challenges that are going to be faced, a common law system to some extent would also work quite well by having like legal flexibility to constantly be changing rules through court judgments. Do you want to touch on?
Actually, I think earlier on, Stefan was talking about the first crime ever committed in space. Would you maybe want to touch on that just briefly before we wrap up?
Oh, yeah, sure. No, technically hasn't really been committed, but it was being investigated, because in 2019, NASA suspected that a US astronaut, Anne McLean, had been wrongfully accessing financial documents of her partner from the International Space Station. So she was in orbit committing a crime, allegedly. And then it turned out to be a really messy crime, because it seems like her partner had been lying basically to the authorities about it, and then they charged her partner, and anyway, they dropped the case. But if it was true, and if she had committed that crime, then that would have been the first crime in space. And the reason why I think it's really interesting is because it's a precedent for how crime would work on Mars. So the way the ISS works, the International Space Station, it's from the, they were set out in a treaty in 1998 or something like that. And based on the module you're in, if you're in the US module or in the Russian module or the European module, that's the jurisdiction that the crime is in. So she committed it, she allegedly committed it from the American module. And so it was American jurisdiction, so it wasn't an issue there. Mm-hmm. But if it was committed in the Russian module, it would have been Russian jurisdiction. And if it was in the European module, in this case, it would be French. Mm-hmm. So that's a way that it could work in the future.
Maybe that's something that our listeners could look into later. Thank you so much for sharing. This has been such an eye-opening discussion. I love how one what-if question led us into debates about sovereignty, ownership, citizenship, even ethics.
Yeah, totally. And I think it shows the future of law is not just on Earth. It can be anywhere in the world that, you know, we might not even have discovered. It can be interplanetary, but also even outside of the Milky Way. But yeah, I'm still not over the fact that my shawarma shop will be, you know, owned by someone else and I can't do anything if it gets stolen.
It's definitely the common heritage of mankind.
Yeah. Thank you so much, Sylvia. We really appreciate you coming on our first ever episode. Did you enjoy it?
Of course. Thank you so much for having me. This was super fun.
Oh, thank you so much.
Thank you. It was such a pleasure having you guys.
Thank you. Nice to meet you.
And to all of our listeners, thank you for tuning in. If you enjoyed today's episode, follow What If, the Legal Futures podcast on Spotify and Instagram, and stay tuned for the next episode.
See you next time, guys. And remember, the future of law begins with your imagination.